Kira Boisai, continuing our discussion about haircuts. We discussed the lower point at which the payas finish, which were at any of three different points of the lower half of the ear. We haven't yet discussed the upper level, the upper line, which one's not allowed to cut the hair. And we'll do that after we've learnt the next sieve, because you'll see, when we come back to it, you'll see exactly why. So the next sieve, Gimel, says as follows, Ein chayev ela batar. The truth is that when it comes to cutting the payas, the posuk says lo sakifu, which means that you shall not create that friar tuck haircut. Right? You shall not create the straight line which runs from here to over the ear. That's lo sakifu. So you would have thought it doesn't make any difference what you use in order to cut the hair. You would have thought, as long as you're creating that shape. But by pa'as zekonom, by the koinim, it says lo sashkis. There's a lot of hashkoso, of destroying the hair. So there's a lot of discussion in the Gemara, Tosefta, Tosfos, etc. Basically, what they say is that the issa of cutting payas also is only an issa of loisashchis, of destroying it completely, of removing the hair right down to the skin. And the question is, how far is that? So the Sefta says quite clearly that if you're cutting with a razor, that is called cutting close to the skin. That is the issa of loy sashchis. What happens if you're cutting with scissors? Scissors don't get quite as close. And similarly, electric clippers when I was young, they used to be manual clippers as well. They had to do this, you know, like this all the time. Today they all use electric clippers. But clippers is also a form of a scissor, and it doesn't get as close to the skin as a razor does. So there it says as follows, Ein chayev ela batar, the Shulchan Aruch says quite clearly that the issa of cutting payas is only if you are close to the skin like a tar. V'yesh oistrim b'misparayim ke'en tar. And the samu asa b'misparayim, when you're using scissors, ke'en tar, if those scissors can get very close to the skin. If they can get as close to the skin as a blade, I don't think anything gets as close to the skin quite as much as a blade, except, which we'll also have to discuss, if you use chemicals, if you use a cream or a powder or something like that, that can also get close to the skin. But nevertheless, v'yesh lochush ledivreim, says the Shulchan Aruch, and there's no choluk on that, the v'yesh lochush ledivreim. So now comes the question of how close is close? How close is the tar to the skin? Interestingly, the Otz Mefoshim brings down from the Beis Lechem Yehuda, which is just interesting for us, he writes as follows, Ho arizal ho yanoig be'inyan peyas harosh. And then he has a long description as to where he used to leave the hair. But basically, the chumrah of the Arizal, which is taken on by many of the by many people, is those who leave payas, is that instead of taking a straight line from here to the top of the ear, he took a curved line. In other words, he went up a little bit on the way. Right? It was like a half circle, if you like. It was round between there and there. Okay, and then it says as follows. And then he says it was Zokon, and with the beard, Loi Hoya Magaleach Klal. He didn't remove the beard at all. He didn't cut the hair of the beard at all. Loi Batar, Veloi Bemisparayim, Loi Lamala, Veloi Lamata, Veloi Beshomokan Klal. He says, Klal Veikah, Zulas Haseesh Ala Sofo. Yeah, even the Arizal would trim his moustache because it would get in the way. Hamakev, Hoachilo, Hoyachoitech Bemisparayim. So the hair of the moustache, which was in the way of the food, he would cut with scissors. I know there are many, many Hasidim who are makpid not to touch the hair at all, and maybe others who are not Hasidim. But there are many who don't. They never cut any of the hair at all. I've seen people who have got beards where, you, literally, when their mouth is closed, you can't see that there's a mouth there at all. Right? The moustache is so long that it sort of covers the whole area. But it says that the Arizal did cut the moustache with scissors. He left his payas to grow long, and he wouldn't cut them. In other words, if they were long enough to merge into the beard, that's where he used to cut them. So in other words, why? Because he said, otherwise they don't look like Peyos Sorosh anymore. They become part of the Zokon. And therefore, he says, "She'os ha'yechotchan adoyse mokum, she'mishom lamata lo'yikro Peyos Sorosh." So Pa'asorosh. So therefore, we've got the Arizal who's saying three things. Number one, that we have a curved top over here, and that's what we'll discuss next time, is exactly where the top line is. And secondly, that it seems to be okay, even if you're makbin, not to cut the beard, but to trim the moustache in a place where it disturbs food, it disturbs eating, is mutter.
Start of the Tereway, Northwest London, Friday, 10th Zion Cheshvan, 7th November. Rino Rab, Rabbi Shrol, Fine, Shlita. The life and Torah of Rab Shimon Yosef Zevi. The sixth Torah is sponsored by family Berkovitz, with the Shulchan Aswim of Edie Berkovitz, Hatechin Yosef Fishman. Nereyod Chasta took place last Sunday. He Rotsun. Sheiv Nubai, Tim of Israel, the Shem Lissilo. Ula Inu Nishmach. Our founder, Rabbi Yosef Dov Ben. Shimon, Michal, Tzvi, Itzkovitz, Achron, Levrocha.
So good, I'm glad on the poster it's got the right name. Rav Shlomo Yosef. Rav Shlomo Yosef Zevi. I've chosen him because I think he's very, very, very well known. He was a major figure in the Torah world in Eretz Yisrael in the early years of the state. He was a major influence in popularizing Torah learning to the masses at every level of learning. His major legacy was being the founding chief editor of Encyclopedia Talmudis, which he started, inaugurated in 1947, and he edited for over 30 years until his patira in 1978. And currently it's published already over 50 volumes, an unbelievable resource on every level of learning. So that was his major legacy. He was born in 1888 in a small town near Minsk, and where his father was a Rav. His learning spanned both Litvish and Hasidish worlds. He learnt in the Mir and Bechavrusa with Rabbi Yechiel Yaakov Weinberg, the Sridi Eish. He also had close connections to Chabad, to the Schneerson family. He received his smicha from the Rogatchover and also from the Oruch HaShulchan, Rabbi Yechiel Michal Epstein. In the early days of communism, when he was growing up, he was active politically, and he was imprisoned together with Diana Bramsky, specifically for editing a journal which was very political, Yagdil Torah. They were both imprisoned together. He came to Eretz Yisrael in 1935. He was active in the Mizrahi movement. And besides Encyclopedia Talmudis, he was a prolific writer of journals and newspapers. And these formed the basis for his many popular Sforim. And they were popular. His Sforim brought Torah to the full spectrum of the Torah world, ranging, of course, from the comprehensive resource of Torah learning Encyclopedia Talmudis to the populist Sipurei Hasidim on every Parsha and on every Yontif. He's got beautiful stories culled from the Hasidic world, which he was very much immersed in. And so he really addresses the full spectrum of Klal Yisrael, the learning world of Klal Yisrael. In between, he wrote Hamoedim Bahalocha, and in his preface, he says the title is not Hilchas Moedim, but Moedim Bahalocha, because it's not meant to be a comprehensive survey of the halacha of Moedim, but he highlights sources of dinim and minhogim, and addresses halachic issues of every yontif. He wrote another sefer, which is not so used so much, but it's a magnificent sefer called Ishim Beshitos. And what he does is he brings the household names of the world of the Beis HaMedrash, he brings them to life, he profiles their biographies, but more importantly, he profiles their Derech HaLimud. So you're talking about household names which are part of the Beis HaMedrash, the Netziv, Reb Chaim Soloveitchik, the Rogachova, the Meshech Chochma, Reb Chaim Oizer, Reb Baruch Be'er Leibovitz, Chazanish, and many others. He deals a full chapter with their biography, but primarily their Derech HaLimud. But what I want to do today, in the time that we have, is to look at his very popular sefer on the Parsha and on Moedim, short, sharp reflections on the Parsha, La Torah Ula Moedim. And he was a reluctant publisher. His svarim were the result of pressure from his Talmidim. He says, why don't you publish these things? And La Torah L'Moedim was a result of a Friday night shmuzen that he used to give to the Daf HaYomi Shir in his house. And on Friday nights, he gave something on the Sedra. And it's a wonderful resource of philosophical, very original philosophical insights on the Parsha, a wonderful resource for droshas, and a wonderful resource for a vort on the Sedra, but not just stam a vort. It triggers discussions. He's very original in his thinking. So what I want to do in the time that we have is to look at various. There's so much, but I've culled six. We'll see if we have time. Six ideas on the Parsha, starting from last week's Sedra, Parshas Lech Lecha. And something very simple, but something at the same time very profound. Vayomer Hashem el Avram Lech Lecha. So he says from B'derech Kabbalah, so Lech Lecha is a, everybody, all the Mefarshim ask, we understand the Lech, but what's the Lecha? So the Lecha is L'Tovoscho L'Anoscho, says Rashi. And he talks about, he splits it up, how journey is debilitating in many ways. You don't get, you lose your wealth, you lose your name, etc. And that explains V'eschol Gogodol, V'avarechacho, V'agadlo Shemecho, etc. But what he says is the Lecha means go into yourself. But Derech Kabbalah says it's really a tzivui for every Yid. It's not just for Avram. This is a legacy for every Yid in the future. That the primary task of Avram and his journey, not only to Eretz Canaan, but his journey to be the founder of a Goy Godol, Avram, start with yourself. Before you start with others, Ve'es Lech Lecho, go into yourself, and delve into yourself, self-examination, appraisal if you like. And what Rav Zevin says, what the Rebbeinu Shalom told Avram was, Avram, nobody's expected to achieve things beyond your koichos. Everybody's unique, everybody's created for Tzelem Elokim, and you, Avram, is the only Avram in the world. And therefore, the first task that you have before you start being mashpia on other people, look into yourself. Lech Lecho, go into yourself. Nobody is expected to achieve beyond your own kochus, your own capabilities. However, the sting in the tail is that you are expected to achieve your own kochus. And therefore, he says, that which is within your kochus, you are expected. And he quotes a pasuk from Koheles, Koheles, Kol ashetimso yodcho lasos bekochacho asay. All that is within your hands to do and within your capabilities, do. So this could be misconstrued. In other words, do whatever you can do. The Rabbanu Shalom says it's carte blanche. You can do whatever you like in the world. The world is there. The world is your oyster. He said Chas v'Shalom. It's not telling you that whatever you're capable of doing can you do. What it's saying is, Kol Asher Bekochecho, all that is within the koyach that the Rabbanu Shalom gave you for avodah, that asay, that is what you should do, not anything. So he quotes from Reb Zusha from Anapol, Reb Zusha said, at Me'ev Estrim, I'm going to have some difficult confrontation with the Rabbeinu Shalom. Rabbeinu Shalom is going to ask me some uncomfortable questions. He says, there's some questions which I have no problem with whatsoever. If the Rabbeinu Shalom were asked to ask me, he says, Reb Zusha, you've lived your life, and you know the Besht also lived his life. Why didn't you achieve what the Besht achieved? He says, no problem whatsoever, because I'll say to the Rabbeinu Shalom, because quite simply, you didn't make me like the Besht. Didn't give me the koichus of the Besht. What about the Magid Mezrich? If he asked me that, no problem whatsoever. He says, Rabbeinu Shalom, you didn't make me like him. But he says, there's one question which I'm petrified of, and that is, the Rabbeinu Shalom says to me, Reb Zusha, why weren't you Reb Zusha? I created you as an individual. Nobody else is Reb Zusha in this world. But how much of Reb Zusha did you achieve? So why weren't you as Reb Zusha? So therefore, Rav Zevin says very beautifully, the call, the clarion call, if you like, to Avram Avinu, Lech Lecha, it wasn't just a geographical mission. It was a personal mission. Before you start with going to Eretz Yisrael, before you start being mashpia on other people, Avram, think about yourself. Who are you? I created one Avram Avinu. And he says, this is the legacy that Avram left to every Yid, L'dorei Doros. That this is the clarion call to all of us. Lech Lecha. You are an individual. You're a special individual. Find out who you are. Find out what your koichos are. And achieve as much as you can. And you don't have to look to the right. You don't have to look to the left, above or below. Look into yourself. It's a wonderful, beautiful message. And it works on every level. You know, for a youngster today, starting out, it's wonderful for a mitzvah message. Tell a bar mitzvah boy or bas mitzvah girl, Lech Lecha, think about yourself. There's only one of you. So that's on last week's Sedra. What about this week's Sedra? He's got something very, very, I think, very original. Parshas Vayera, right? So if you had to pick two parshas in this parsha, which has been a cornerstone of Jewish life, L'dorei Doros, what would you say? It's the first parsha and the end parsha. The first parsha is the parsha of the Rabbeinu Shlomo coming to Avram, and it's gone down in history as the parsha of Achnasas Orchim. Every detail. Why do we find every detail about Yeshuanu Tachas Aitz, Rachas Raglechem, every single detail, right? We know Masa Ovos Siman Labonim. We know Chazal tell us that everything that Avram did had its outcome later. But nevertheless, why all the detail? And the detail is because it established, it buried, if you like, within the DNA of every Yid, the concept, not the concept, but the practice of Achnasas Orchim. Why is it that we practice Achnasas Orchim? It's because of it's in the DNA of Avram. This is what Reb Chaim Volozhin says when he talks about the Sorin Nisyonis Nisnaso Avram Avinu, which we'll come to a bit later, when all of a sudden we find Avram described as Avinu, whereas the Asoradoras Minoach Ad Avram, it's just Avram. Why all of a sudden with the Nisyonis is it Avram Avinu? Why? Because the Nisyonis established within Avram that his influence in life as Avinu, that's traveled down the generations, that science of genetics is established in the neshama of every Yid. The Hachnosis of Urchim of Avram Avinu is within us. That's the beginning of the Parsha. What's at the end? Parsha of Akedah. He says this: the bookends of the Parsha, really, are Hachnosis Urchim and the Akedah. Hachnosis Urchim and Mesiras Nefesh. And that's part of our DNA. The one thing that links them together is that neither of them never happened. Neither of those events ever actually happened in reality. Why? Because we know the Hachnosis, when it says the Malachim Bayochelu, it says Nirim Ka'ochlim. We had to pretend, right? Nirim Ka'ochlim. And all the Yeshuanu Tachas Oetz, the Chemo and the Cholov, and the Maim, Rachatzurag Lechem, it was all for nothing. It was all just a charade. It was a play. Why? Because it was no real Hachmas HaSochim. All that remains from that parsha was the Rotson of Avraham Avinu. All that remains was his machshava, his intention. It was intention to provide Achnas HaSorachim, but was it real Achnas HaSorachim? No. It was a charade in many ways. So that's the Achnas HaSorachim. Let's turn to the Akedah. The Akedah is also, the legacy of the Akedah is also only the Rotzon. The Rabboni Shalom never intended that Yitzchak should be a korban. As Pasuk in Yirmiyahu says, Asher lo tzivisi velo dibarti. Velo also alibi, say Chazal, ze Yitzchak ben Avram. Lo also alibi, Rabban Shalom says, I never intended it. Did it happen? No. It says, Vayishlach es yodo, he extended his hand. So Chazal say that in a kodosh, in a tzaddik, your evorim, your limbs, actually work automatically. In other words, there's a short distance between the moyach and the actual goof. If your moyach works, when the shomer wants to do something, the evorim work automatically. It wasn't the case with the Akedah. Avram had to actually impel his hand to go out. Why? Because it was not really a tziva of the Rabbeinu Shalom. So with other mitzvahs, his goof responded automatically. It was on autopilot, if you like. But not with the Akedah. Why? Because al tishlach yodcho esanah. The Rabbeinu Shalom lo also alibi. The Rabbeinu Shalom never intended. So it never happened. So the Mesiras Nefesh never happened in fact. All we have from the Akedah is Rizim Makdim in the Mitzvahs. Fayashkim Avram Avoka. That's the legacy of Klal Yisrael. Whatever you do, do with Zrizus. So however, what is the limud here? So Rav Zevin doesn't quite put it like this, but we know that unfortunately, living in a secular society, we are conditioned to live in a results-driven world. That everything depends on whether it happens or it doesn't happen. The Rotzon and Machshava are irrelevant, but not in the world of the Rabbeinu Shalom. In the world of the Rabbeinu Shalom, he sent to this world a world of Rotzon, a world of Machshava, and Hatzofa Kolanistoros. The Rabbeinu Shalom knows what's inside us. And if it doesn't happen, the Rabbeinu Shalom gives a schar for the effort. So therefore, that's a beautiful idea from Rav Zevin. So he says, Hachnos HaSorachim and Mesiras Nefesh, which have gone down in history as part and parcel of the caricature of the Yid, he says, all started out only through Machshava and Rotzon, but not in fact. And it's a powerful message to tell us that a person should never be miyayish and never think, you know, it never happened. I tried. That's good enough in the Rabban Shalom's eyes. So now let's move on to another idea from Parshas Vayera. He says, Vayita Eshel Beveshova. This Eshel has gone down in history. Rashi says there's two Perushim. What was this Eshel? Aleph Shin Lamed, Achila, Shtia, and Lino. Again, it's Achnos HaSorachim. And Rashi says, what is this Eshel? It is either possibly a pardes, an orchard, a tree, or a punduk. He actually set up an inn, a hotel of some sort. So Rav Zevin takes these two concepts. He says, an Eshel, it seems that it was both at the same time a pardes, a tree, and at the same time it was a bais. But if it's a tree, then vayita is appropriate. You plant a tree, but you don't plant a house. You don't plant a punduk. So how does vayita associate with both perushim, with both a punduk and a pardes? He says a pardes, a tree, and a house are contradictory, contrasting concepts. The milah of a tree is that it stands for nitzchias, that a tree is enduring, because not only when the tree dies, but it produces perus, and there are saplings, which can therefore give nitzchias to the tree. A tree proliferates, it reproduces, so it stands for eternity. A house, by contrast, is temporary. You can have a diras keva, but even a diras keva doesn't last forever. right? It deteriorates. But the milah of a house, as opposed to a tree, is that it gives greater protection. A tree is flimsy. It doesn't protect you against the elements, which a house does. The tree is only valuable when the fruit is there to be taken, or the shade is there. So therefore, he says, what the Eshel of Avram is describing, the Eshel of Avram had both milahs. It had the milah of a house, the protection of a house, both physically and in Ruchnias, but it also had the Nitzchias of a tree. And he says, that is a Jewish home. That is the synthesis of a true home which Avram laid the foundations of. This Eshel, the Jewish home, is not fragile like a tree. It has the endurance of a tree, but it also has the protection of a house. Why is that? Because what do you find on a Jewish house? First of all, you walk in and there's a mezuzah on the door. Shivisi Hashem l'negdi somid. And in a Jewish house, you step in, v'hin aniyim b'nei v'isechov. There's a chnosos orchim in that house. V'hiya b'isvad l'chachomim. So the house, which will eventually deteriorate, the ruchnius of that house is nitzchias. So it has the qualities, the endurance of a tree, and the protection of a house, and that is the model of a base Yehudi, Vayita Eshel, and that is how you plant a house, not only a tree. You plant a house for generations. So that's from this week's Edra. Let's move on, Parshas Vayechi. We say, Yehuda Yoducho Achecho, that everybody will thank Yehuda. Why? Because Korah Rovatz Ka'ariyeh, he bowed down and he crouched like a lion. Contradictory description. A lion doesn't, it's not known as a lion of Gevurah for bowing down. A lion is ready to launch itself, right? So what's the Korah Rovatz Ka'ariyeh? The Gevurah of an Ari is when it's about to pounce. But he says the synthesis, the combination of Korah Rovatz, subdued like a lion. In other words, Yehuda Yoducha Achecho. What was the model of Yehuda to his brothers and to the future of Klal Yisrael? It's the ability to have this blend of being subdued while at the same time to have the Gevurah of a Yid. What's this? He says a human being oscillates between, on the one hand, hubris, gaiva, overconfidence, self-confidence, arrogance. That's the danger of a Yid. On the other hand, the opposite is depression. A person has a feeling of inadequacy, incompetence, yiush. Right, the machler of our age, depression, mental ill health. So a person can oscillate between the two. How do you get the balance? In fact, he brings the Kotzker, who says an interesting thing. Why do we say in Hilchas Aveda that Yush is Kona? Why should you punish? Why should Yush be Kona? Why should the person forfeit his Aveda because he gives up hope? He says, and the answer is it's an Onish, because no Yid should ever give up hope. He says, the fact that he's Mayayish, that itself is a tevia against him, and therefore he loses his Aveda. That's the Kotzker. But what we all say, what he says is that every person has a synthesis of both extremes. When a person feels depressed, person feels that he's a gornish, that he has nowhere to go, he says, the Rabbi Shalom gives us an outlet of teshuvah, that Toshev Enosh Adako, there's always the prospect when you're feeling low, there's always the opportunity to reverse it. And the opposite is true as well. When you're feeling too full of yourself, there's gaiva, kolchi v'otzim yodi, then you should say like Yaakov, kotonti mikol hachasodim, Rabbeinu Shlomo, you've been too kind to me. So in Yiddishkeit we have this adjustment when a person arrives at either of these two extremes, either supreme hubris, So there's a, we drag you down. Or if a person feels that I'm a gornished, you say, the Rabbeinu Shalom says that there's an outlet. And the model for this is Moshe Rabbeinu. He says, "Vat chasreyu me'at me'elokim." Moshe's madrega was only slightly below the Rabbeinu Shalom, or the Malachim. But on the other hand, Voyish Moshe onav me'od mikol adam. Moshe got it exactly right. He knew exactly what his kochos were, but at the same time, he knew what his limitations were. And therefore, Kora Rovatz Ka'aryeh. That is why Yehuda Yehuducha Achecho. Why should we be grateful for Yehuda? Because take your model from a lion. A lion has the potential to do everything, Gevura, but Kora Rovatz. It knows its place. That's a beautiful idea. We've got time for a bit more. Parshas Tazria. Parshas Tazria follows Parshas Shmini. In Parshas Shmini, we have all the dinim of kashrus, thank you, kosher, non-kosher, et cetera. And then we come to Parshas Kisazria. It talks about Isha Kisazria, a woman in childbirth. And Chazal, Rashi brings, Kashem she yitzirosu shel adam acha kol behemo chayav ha'of, v'asiv reishis. It's interesting that when did human beings appear on the scene in Masa Bereshis? Right at the end, after animals. So therefore the Rabbeinu Shalom put the laws of kashrus after the laws of animals. Kach toroson is parsha achat toros behemot v'chai v'ov. Shmini, you have the laws of kashrus of animals, and now Isha Kisazria, come to the... So Rav Sefin throws up the question. He says, what is better? Is it better to be first, or is it better to be last? On the one hand, he says, it's good. First gives a... is mashpia on the rest. So we have Rosh Hashanah, right? We've had the Yomim Noroim. So from Yomim Noroim, we take the inspiration of Yomim Noroim, we carry it through. So we have Rosh Hashanah, we have Rosh Chodesh, and we have Kohen Levi and Yisrael. The Kohen is called up first. So that is more choshuv to be at the beginning. On the other hand, we say Achron Achron Chaviv, that to be at the tail end is also very good. Shabbos, right? Today is Erev Shabbos. Sheshes Yomim Tavodu, and then V'yom Hashvi Shabbos L'Hashem Elokecho, and Misha Torach Be'erev Shabbos, Yochel B'Shabbos. So Shabbos is a climax. So is it good to be at the beginning, or is it good to be at the end? So a Gabba can never get it right, okay? But it all depends, he says, if working to a climax, Shabbos is the end of the week. So if Shabbos is a climax for you, then Achron Achron Chaviv. It's just like the clipper to the pri. You tear away the peel because you want the fruit. Then Achron Achron Chaviv. But, he says, Adam HaRishon was meant to be the pinnacle of creation, of Bereshis. And therefore, he says, one condition. He says, if you want to be at the beginning, that is only if you live up to your role as a Tzbriya, which is Salim Elohim. If you know who you are and you live up to your tafkid in life, then you can be at the beginning. Being at the end also depends that if you live up to your tafkid, but if you're zocha, he says, so being last can be either a privilege or your downfall. He says, kol olam kedai hulo. If you live up to your role as an Ovid Hashem, then you come into a Shulchan Aruch. The whole world is there. The whole world is your oyster. But if, on the other hand, you live a life as a behema, then Chazal say Yatush Kodmoch. Even a flea came before you. Time for one short more. V'zos HaBroch, I'll do very, very quickly. Imino Eishdos Lomo. He says, Torah is compared to fire. It's also compared to water. Fire and water. He says, Yomim Noroim is Mashpia with the elements of fire. Eish Dos, Yom Kippur is fire. On Yom Kippur, we divest ourselves from the Gashmius of the world. We enter the Shul and we allow our Neshamas to soar upwards like Eish. And we leave our own lives and we commune with the Rabbani Shalom. It's a different world. We're like the Malachim. We wear white. That's Eish, rising upwards. Sukkos, we also leave our homes. But there, we move downwards to Adiras Arai. Not Inui, but Zman Simchoseinu. Somachto b'chagecho, ein simcha ele b'bosu v'yayin. So look at the contrast of odor of Yom Kippur and Sukkos. Yom Kippur is the neshama is like Eish. Sukkos, the neshama goes into the world as Mekadesh, that which or the chol. And therefore, he says, very, very beautifully, that as we go from Yom Nuroyim into our lives, as we are now, going into a long golus, if you like, until the inspiration of Chanukah and Purim and Pesach, he says, we've got to take a bit of Eish with us, of the Yom Nuroyim, the influence of Eish, of Yom Kippur, and a bit of the Mayim of Sukkos. He says, any day you can have a little bit of a voda of Eish. He says, when you daven a mincha on a normal day, remember how you were at Nila. Remember that Eish feeling that you had at Nila. And when you go into your business office, he says, think how you felt on Sukkos, when with the achila and shea and the bos and the yayin, you can be mekadish the chol. And that is the avoda of Eish, and that's the avoda of Mayim. So some beautiful ideas, and it's the beauty is that it's dovah shavah l'chol nefesh. It's good for adults. It's good for children. It triggers debates, discussion, but it's all solid stuff. It's not artificial. Okay, thanks for
I have to go to, unfortunately.